We have such a treat for you this afternoon. We're going to hear from Dennis Golding here on my closest to me and curator Michael Doe. We've worked very closely together in the ideation and realization of this spectacular work that's behind Dennis. I think is it 16, it's with nearly 277 pieces over. I can't remember the numbers, you'll have to tell us who you're talking about. But it's an incredible work that was made here at the National Arts School. We're so proud that Dennis collaborated with Janet Parker-Smith, who's a master printer, and of course our head of printmaking, Carolyn McKenzie Craig. So we've got this wonderful opportunity to hear from Dennis. We have two more things after this talk, so please don't go away. We're going to hear from another one of our wonderful artists, Ellen Ashrangan-Hanson, who'll be speaking soon after Dennis. And then in the afternoon, we have an artist-led demonstration with Jackie Chang, who's here in the front row. She'll be showing us all how to make a beautiful tassel. So thank you, everybody, and over to you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Katrina. So lovely to see so many familiar faces in the crowd, and a nice kind of turnout for a home gathering, home artist. Many of you will know Dennis Golding, probably one of the most busiest artists in New South Wales at the moment, you know, juggling so much, spinning so many plates, and doing it so wonderfully. And so I'll give a little kind of, John Point description of this work, and then maybe we can kind of talk a bit more about its beginnings and how it came to be, and then where we want to go. So we haven't really prepared anything, and so as the kids say, we're just going to roll dog it and let's just go. But this is a really profound sort of meditation of autobiography, and it's one of the a key sort of concern and strategy of this show that many of the artists reach into their kind of personal histories to tell stories. But it's not necessarily a kind of, here's a direct representation, here's a depiction of where I come from, there's a kind of chronology or timeline. It's often twisted and warped, kind of cut open and then re-sewn back together to offer something that is deeply profound and pointed and really rich. And so this is a work that is all those things. Dennis, so what is Bingo?
It's a personal story. It's really drawn from childhood memory. Some of you might know of my work, but I often explore childhood memories and find ways that we can re-represent Indigenous cultural identity and empower our community and Bengals. Bingo Nights was a very special event that was hosted by my grandmother, Faye, and then Faye, the great-granny is allowed to call her Pink Nanny, because she made her house pink, and my auntie Amber Pink. Right down the bottom of Redley Street, where they both lived, auntie was in 57, Edley Street, and then was down at 53. In the middle, 55, was a abandoned terrace house. And this was the event where our community hosted and had bingo nights. From the outside, you'd be able to see, you just see it at night, just as an empty house. It was all bricked up as well, so you couldn't tell if it to the windows or to the doors. And only on the side gate of Ben's house that you could go through, and this was a special private invitation that we met and Marley had sent out to the community. And there's a lot of etching, like there's drawings on here that speak about that, about how men and Marley have picked up a phone or send letters across the streets and just was this kind of underground bingo night. It was something that our families and our community needed to create as a space that was just for mom, just for them. Because around that time, this was the late 90s, early 2000s, where, constantly with our community, the streets would be surveillance by police. So there was this experience that we felt as kids or as community members where we felt that we were like survivor us, like together with us, and being questioned on the street or being asked, where are we going? So for our members, we needed to find ways that we could connect and not have any distraction, have peace, or just enjoy the love and laughter and joy through this generous house. And today it's Audrey Shabbat area. This all be true part of the grey, right, all down that street. But the colour of the bingo cards, if you can see, are all inspired from the many houses that used to have personality, different painted colours. Back in this house was made of pink. The brick house, the 53, 55, and the street was a big yellow, a blue tone brick. But this was bingo cards.
Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful work of the way that you've kind of taken this idea and these stories and this experience of living in a neighborhood and completely sort of fractured it, pinning these prints, you know, with the various corrugated cardboard, the colored prints, the different illustrations, you know, the copper plates, to kind of build sort of constellation, a relational sort of network of people, of memory, of you know, the neighborhood cat, the kind of the fishing thing. I don't do those, but whatever they call it, loves me. So it's interesting, Dennis, because I think for a lot of Indigenous people, there's a sense that they're asterisk people. You know, they're asterisk in terms of numbers. You know, we talk about deaths in custody, we talk about, you know, over-policing, we talk about limited a shorter lifespan, limited health services. But, you know, Aboriginal people aren't in great enough populations to kind of warrant in those senses called representation. So there's sometimes just an asterisk. And so when kind of government structures represent the First Peoples of this country in this way, it's kind of, you know, a sort of minimization and a kind of statistic, there's a real need to kind of combat. To say we are not just a minimal number, we're not just a deficient this, we're not just inadequate that. And so this is a real sort of antidote, a real sort of political, but joyful political statement. So Dennis, tell me about why you do what you do to tell the stories in the way that you do.
I guess I always try to reflect on my childhood memory and the shared memories of my community. But also find a way of highlighting or, you know, recognising those histories of how colonisation has impacted on our people and from the very first sight of the chat as well. I remember we had an early conversation at the start of this project where I was interested in the material clay settlers, when they come into the shores of the harbour, they look like the people who were on that ship are actually looking for beds of clay to build across these lands. So I was very interested in that history, but also the material, how it's related to my body, my experience, and how our community in Redfern, they're all surrounded by these earthy coloured tones of brief and terra butta, ochres that are also used in the Indigenous practices, cultural practices, so I'm always trying to find those layers in this, layers of history where it can relate to my experience and come from my perspective of how I've seen this country and how it's impacted me and my family and community, but also for my ancestors, generations before me, to understand how this history of our possession and our colonization has really affected us, our health and well-being, and things that are just displaced our families, because living in Redfern has showed me how beautiful community and family can be. And I guess media, through this the media has really portrayed Redfern a lot, the community, as this negative and violent place, and never really highlighted any stories of joy and love. And that's what this artwork that represents and that gives that reclaiming of our identity or our community that we are a strong community. We do find ways to try to reconnect and protest, appeal. My name was also meant to be here today, but unfortunately, we're sitting on here today. But through this whole process of making it known, it's been really beautiful, by the way, to share this story with both my nans. Both of my grandmothers lived on the Hill Street as well, so I've loved everyone. But Nan also speaks from her generation coming into Redfern back in the 60s. Many of the women from stolen generations, or survivors of stolen generations, created spaces themselves, something like bingo or like, gatherings at the pub, the community center. They needed to create spaces and to have a space to feel or just laugh and bring joy to one another.
And I guess this is the kind of flip side of resilience, perseverance, and agency and continuing that people don't really talk about, is that, yes, you need sharp tools, you need sort of protest, you need pointedness, you need sort of exclamation marks, but there's also the whispering, the comfort, the private, the kind of tenderness that feeds that as well.
Yeah, there's that bottom line. And, it was the numbers as well that really stood out in this artwork. There's so many. But that's how we kind of communicated across the block. Like, there's down there at Picky Circle or down there at Lanamai, that we navigated around the streets by not just saying, Arnie's house, Arthur's house, but we knew the numbers, and it was this numbering system that we kind of learned, and we just knew how to kind of understand that urban landscape. And that was probably where the age too, and I learned that too, as a kid of going up to Fitcher Center to go get some milk from him. Or just beautiful little stories or ways of communicating with them.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And so I think we've covered kind of where it came from. So maybe Dennis, we talked about how it came to be.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of work involved.
Lots of work. I'm so glad it's up. But it's taken a lot of work, a lot of love into work. It was every Sunday from the very start of concept design, I sat down with my name. I go see Nan. Both my legs every Sunday, so every time was a good yarn. And it would reflection of memory of shared histories or shared memories in record, but particularly bingo. So I told them, and they've been along this journey the whole time, which has been real special. And then to make the story relate, resonate with the process of making the artwork, and what really stood out was how we collected cardboard. It was found cardboard around the streets with pieces of drink cartons or cereal box cardboard, anything that we can find. So every member of the rip it, draw their numbers. These were very lucky numbers. They exchanged as well. And we never doubt. I used like text or Dabba to mark our numbers when we're inside WBO because we'd exchange cards or we'd reuse them for another game. And so I loved that memory of paper. So it needed to be a paper based work. And that's why I thought, okay, three months is going to be amazing. So art school, there's facilities here. We could program a really good art work and concept design to develop this. So, I started from the top of how many can I create? I dreamt big of doing like 100 or 200 pilgrimages. In the end, what you say was about 142 prints. But what I really loved was the process of pigment that we had created about three plates. One was for creating the drawings and the grid and the numbers. The second plate was to create the soft ground of the corrugated cardboard. You'll see the textures in the background, the indigo patterns, and also the dirt we have. So instead of using gathers, we picked up dirt from outside on the street and we placed dirt on our patterns. And so that's how you can see the dust, the remnants of dust, or dirt onto each of the parts.
There's a real sense of country, literally being fed into the work.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's how we came up with the colour set as well, like using her, you know, Nanette's favourite colour, pink, the different vocal tones as well as the... and then we, each one, we came here last week and it was just an intense workshop over placing a projector, seeing all of the you know, cards right there onto scale. And we started from the top and worked our way down the bottom. And we really started using the dirt, you know, closest to earth, right from the bottom, reviewing its way up to speak about the process of coming into the block or coming into Redford and then coming into the house. So on the left side, you see a cat, I see a dog, who are our neighbours as well, down at Redford. And you walk in and you pass number 53, where you see like these motifs of communication, like letters and vocals. And on the right side, you see number 57, balloon there. And the way that Nen and Arnie had created light was they used power cords from each of their hands and brought it all the way to the back of our terrace out. So there's the light bulb over here, the light bulb over there that plants that. So it was placing each of the numbers, each of the cards that all relate to each other, because each of the cards or the ball of the 16 bingo cards were created with family and you know, community as well. So one example of here is like Redfern Reporters, which is of me and my cousin when we used to run around Redfern, thinking that we were little junior reporters, broadcasting live from Redfern a lot. You know, there's recipes on there as well, like Nen was known for her cupcakes that she'd sell from Valpoy, that everyone would come around and buy a cupcake with her. There's also other like seats that would use bikes or like the swims or water camps. To create a sense and bring it into the terrace now. So, yeah, every single card is about a memory or a relationship from the community member.
What I actually love, Dennis, are these ones which don't represent anything and don't have the numbers or the drawings, and are kind of just the dirt prints. Mm. Because while there's a huge sort of open invitation into your life through these very personal sort of stories that are embedded in this work, there are also these points of refusal, these points where actually this is empty, this is not for public representation, consumption, this is not for you. And so can you tell me a little bit more about the how you filtered what went in and what doesn't go in?
Yeah, that was a very big topic or big discussion I had with my aunt. Because of the story of this, it is talking about our aspects right up to us. It was something that we did only know as a community or a family and background. So there was also a sensitivity around, you know, can I actually share this story? Because it still is something that is very personal, that is something that only our community knew, and our family knew. So there's things on there that I felt the dirt, you know, the dirt placement onto the edge pad was a way of sharing something but hiding it underneath the dirt. And I wanted to do that deliberately to it, and so show that there's not all the histories of all the stories and can learn only the little symbols that we share together that speaks about. Yeah, and love for each other. But still, I wanted to create these layers that you can see, and that's why we introduced the copper plates and the corrugated cardboard into, because it speeds up the process. But it really builds up that understanding of how you create a bingo card and how you can also choose not to create something as well.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Dennis, it's interesting. So we can talk about why the work, how the work came to be, and maybe the work in here, in this very specific shot. And so the neighbour at the gate is a kind of invitation to First Nations artists, but also Malaysian Australian artists, with the view of actually where are the parallels, where are the crossovers, where are the connection points that people have living within with the legacies and shadows of colonialism and oppression. And so I think there's a sense in the world that we're different, you know, things are far apart, but actually while we might speak different languages or maybe eat different things, power is power and it is the same everywhere in terms of kind of male dominance, in terms of sort of class hierarchies, in terms of language and sort of a lot of things. And so if Dennis, the process of making this work alongside all the artists here has been about a year, and we met a lot of times, you know, we had lots of yarns, lots of conversations, lots of dialogues. And so what was that like for you as a person and you as an artist?
I always, it's about relational aesthetics, to be able to share stories collectively through a collaboration as well. And I work in public art a lot. I work in graphic design, but also feel that curatorial experience myself as well. When I was at art school, and I always value that that practice of collaboration or consulting with communal members and the cultural relatives. It's always been something I've tried to be into all parts of my practice, including this. And I just loved when I was first approached by Glenn that this was the approach that these were all collectively coming together as curatorial. And what we're trying to do is build this community of conversation to learn from you, to exchange stories with you, and to connect with the artists as well, which has been so special. And I just love that. And I think that's what really made me think about this story, because I've been sitting on this story for quite a long time, but I've never found that there was an opportunity to present it again. So, and I remember at the very beginning, I was thinking about a couple of ideas, to still explore, the lattice fences that I've done in previous work. But I think this was a huge jump to really kind of think about where do I go next and how do I want to share in the story. And all that sense to do it from the show.
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, I think so much about being an artist, being a curator, it's about not only the right artist, but it's the right artist, the right work, at the right time, at the right place. And kind of, it's God's work to align all those things, but we managed to do that. And I just want to cast a final question. And unfortunately, now Goldie couldn't be here today. But you've shown her all throughout the process, the work and the examples. And so, I think there have been lots of Asian cultures who pay homage to our elders, same for Aboriginal people too. So can you tell us a little bit about what her response was to this work?
Some funny ones. It's like, you really do it all? Or you're going to put that one on? It's like, oh, I don't like that little symbol, man. What's that? Nan's just very honest, and she'll say how she said it, and she just sat with it for a while. And I think that's why it was important to introduce the copper plates and the number of chips and the corrugated cardboard to spend the process. And that's how we really kind of come to that, discussion about, Nen's loving the colours, she's loving the designs inside of the blank spaces, but also the grid. The grid actually came from her idea because it was about sharing different pathways and line work. And I use a lot of line work in my public art practice. The line work is what really was inspired by Nen. And it reminds us, when she was telling me, love her stories, why she decided to move from country to Zappa. She's, Ned Melvin is a Birra Pirate mid-North Coast in New South Wales. And she made that courageous decision back in the 60s to move with her two children and Pop to move for a country where they need to call Tinghaki, and they came to Redfern, and they most, you know, there's affordable house, there's working opportunities, and there's education. So again, spent a lot of time working in the educational space as an Aboriginal education officer at the local school, and my pop worked along the rails alongside many other migrant families who moved in that area of social housing. And so those grits that you see that are all inspired are different memories, such as like the rainbows or the rivers or the coastlines are all inspiring me. And so, yeah.
And here I was, and oh, that's post-minimalism. Thank you so much, Dennis, not only for this talk, but for this work and this invitation into a very special place. Yeah, so thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. We might have time for one question. You've got an arm wrestle.
I have a question about the art, is that okay?
As long as there's a question mark at the end,
yes.
It's okay.
How do you feel about Redfern now?
Thank you. I'll just say what Monique said when she was asked the question, is that the heart is born. And that's really hard for her to say that too, because that's the place that she came to and trusted to come to a space that was very open and welcoming for her. And over the time, Aboriginal families have been moved from the block one by one, evictions coming. It was just very scary for our families to witness. Families moving next door have taken their bags with them. So there's a history there that again talks about our dispossession. And when it immediately goes back to earlier, she said, the heart is not there anymore, there's no big heart. So I was like that. But what I would like though is that the community is still around. Families are actually moving back and trying to deal with something there. So, and that's why my work as well.
Thank you, Dennis. The next talk's at 2:45, so just hang around, we'll reconfigure the chairs, and then we'll have that.